19 hours 30 UTC on Thursday, December 7th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Their only worry is that whilst he announced a $5.1 billion budget, the government expenditure will be $5.8 billion. So they are worried that government is starting on a deficit.
That was journalist Godwin Mambusha, who was in Parliament when President Emmerson Mnangagwa's first budget was unveiled. We'll have more on that budget story coming up.
Good evening. I'm Kudzanai Mutatwa.
And I'm Mike Hove on VOA Zimbabwe Today. Zimbabwe's new government has unveiled a $5 billion budget for 2018, which it says will revive the country's economy as long as the country can rein in corruption, hold a credible election, and implement investor-friendly laws. Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare for VOA News.
Presenting the budget, Minister of Finance Patrick Chinamasa said reviving Zimbabwe's moribund economy would not be easy. The government must take steps to restore confidence in Zimbabwe's public finances and institutions, he told Parliament.
We need to address the issue of international re-engagement, corruption and indiscipline. We need to ensure an investor-friendly business environment. And lastly, we need to ensure credibility in the conduct of the 2018 election.
Chinamasa said reviving the indigenization law would be one way to bring back foreign investment. The law, which requires Zimbabweans to hold a majority stake in any business, is blamed for driving away potential investors. Independent economic analyst John Robertson thinks the law should be repealed.
We could have had considerable amount of investment but for the existence of that act. I believe that the attempt to impose it was an attempt to legalize the theft of assets of companies, and the warning that anybody trying to start a new company would face the same penalty has been more than enough to stop anybody coming to the country with new investment funds. So the removal of the act is what I'm now hoping for.
The law is still on the books for now, but in naming his cabinet last week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa dropped the Indigenization Ministry, which was in charge of enforcing the policy. On Thursday, Chinamasa said the law, which former President Mugabe used to say was meant to address colonial-era imbalances, would now apply only to diamond and platinum extraction. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
VOA journalist Godwin Mangula was in Parliament today when the budget was unveiled. He says the budget was well received on the floor of the Parliament.
Well, I would say the lawmakers were in high spirits. They were highly expectant because, remember, this was President Emmerson Mnangagwa's first budget. So Finance Minister presented a $5.1 billion budget, which he said the main emphasis was on cutting employment costs, you know, expanding agriculture, as well as, having clean elections next year. So he also, unveiled a number of measures aimed at, reducing government expenditure, such as, the reducing of Zimbabwe's foreign missions and staff at the foreign missions. He also announced that government is going to fire or to terminate the contracts of 3,700 youth officers, as well as stopping the employment of 6,000 teachers for early childhood development. You know, he also introduced a number of measures again to stimulate growth in the industry. The budget was well received by MPs from all the three parties in the National Assembly. But one of the most interesting features of that budget was the amendment to the Indigenization Act. You know, the act that gives 51% to indigenous blacks, and so that act, that law has been amended and to now only relate to platinum and diamonds. So that was welcomed by lawmakers from both sides of the House. Even the opposition MDC said the budget looks good on paper, but they say their only worry is that whilst he announced a $5.1 billion budget, the government expenditure will be $5.8 billion. So they are worried that government is starting on a deficit. So the budget was well received from both sides of the House, and we await to see whether government will stick to this budget, because if you look in the previous budgets, the sticking point has been the implementation, and we hope that maybe government will stick to its budget and implement the measures they unveiled today.
The budget covered many points of the business community, the ones that they wanted. But what about the needs of Zimbabwe's youth? Evan Zininga from our VOA Zimbabwe service has been looking at that question. He joins us now in Studio 22. Welcome, Evans.
Thank you, Mike.
So, Evans, let's fire at it, buddy. The first question, what does this budget have in store for, the proposed budget have in store for the youth?
Interesting question. You know, it's amazing how everybody is jumping into this ship, and the last point to look at is usually the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And I will start by saying this. The African Union 2017 theme was harnessing the demographic dividend by investing in the youth.
Mm-hmm.
That means the whole of Africa is focusing on empowering the youth. Mm-hmm. This is the in thing. This is what's going on in the whole of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, touching base on what this budget is saying in as far as the youth are concerned,
mm-hmm.
for starters, we have jumped from a $4 billion budget
mm-hmm.
in a year to a $5.1 billion budget.
Mm-hmm.
And the youth who have not had as much access to these fundings that are coming through with this,
mm-hmm.
this year, I'm going to talk about two key things that this budget is talking about for the youth.
Mm-hmm.
There is talk of a youth empower bank.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very interesting point
what
to
is
note.
That?
This is a Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe initiative to create mm-hmm. a bank specifically for the youth,
mm-hmm.
so they can run youth programs and youth mm-hmm. project pulling from that.
Okay.
However, there is only $2.5 million budgeted mm-hmm. for that.
Okay.
So
where would the money come from initially? Is this budget being based on money coming in from investments, or is it money that's already there?
The biggest resource for these budgets is usually the taxpayer.
Okay.
So I would like to believe if we can jump from $4 billion mm-hmm. to $5.1 billion,
mm-hmm.
$2.5 million is just a drop in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
There should be a way of raising that much,
mm-hmm.
especially for the youth. Considering that the same budget is coming with a huge reduction in employment mm-hmm, mm-hmm. in the civil service, you
okay.
know they have abolished all the youth offices, and it's literally cut down the employment cost, the wage bill by like $19 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now you said they've abolished a lot of the youths, and the budget itself is not very favorable towards the youths. As you said, it's just a drop in the ocean. How are the youth perceiving this budget? Do they even understand this budget, or are they just hearing numbers and just taking it as it is?
Talking to the youth on the ground, they are not so happy.
Mm-hmm.
You'd probably remember the other day we talked about how they were not happy with not having any member of their youth representing
yeah.
them
mm-hmm.
in there.
Mm-hmm.
However, it still does not say a lot for them. If we consider that there is just talk of a $2.5 million specifically for their projects, and yet there has been some massive injections into other sectors.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the defense figures are so amazing. I would say
to be expected.
Right. Mm-hmm. I would say lots of people will be running to go to join the defense forces next year.
Yes,
you know
yes.
what I'm saying? So yeah, I think the youth are really representing themselves in a very sombre spot. They're not happy.
Mm-hmm. Has Minister Chinamasa said anything about how they plan on using this $2.5 million when it comes to empowering the youth?
That has not been specified as yet, but pointers and hinters, basing on the other issues they are talking about, they are talking about putting the youth in touch with mining and agriculture, so they can also get access. So we hope there's going to be more life in the whole thing.
All right. Thank you so much, Evans.
Hi, you're welcome.
Cheers. Till next time, buddy.
All right. You guys are good. Thank you.
Zimbabwe's new budget proposal is one of the hot topics on social media today. Many people were using the hashtag budget ZW to comment. At MG Muzenda said, "It's a shame that security and defense got more than healthcare. I would think that getting the health sector up and running would be more of a priority than war veterans."
Pash Suela says, "I was hoping for a more tangible remedy to the cash crisis."
Etungamira Ngezi said, "It's clear that this ZANU-PF government has opted for pragmatism rather than idealism in its bid to revamp the comatose economy."
Fred Macheva says, "I think the budget is rather realistic than reformist, except for the changes of the Indigenization Act."
T.M. Mutisi said, "Wrapping up on the recently presented budget 2018, given the current state of affairs in our country, the budget is clear, practical, and attainable. All it requires is the support from us, the region, and the international community."
You're listening. You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from the Voice of America Studio 22. I'm Mike Hove in Washington, D.C.
At 41 past the hour, we continue with the news about Zimbabwe's momentous political change. Former ZANU-PF Youth League member Asi Lumumba, who predicted a military coup in Zimbabwe, says he is rejoining the ruling party now that Emmerson Mnangagwa has replaced Robert Mugabe as president. Lumumba, who has a huge following in social media, says he will push the youth agenda when he rejoins ZANU-PF. Lumumba was expelled from the ruling party for allegedly mishandling youth funds and undermining the authority of then-President Mugabe a year ago. He speaks with VOA Studio 7's Marvelous Mshlanga Nyahuye about this and other issues.
"The journey I've traveled with ZANU-PF is simple. I joined the Revolutionary Party because I believed in the principles by which it stood for, the principles of empowerment, job creation, indigenization. I stood for these principles, hence why I joined the party. When I joined the party, I had one intention and one intention alone, to utilize the vehicle that the party gave me to make sure that the deliverable was extended to young people of Zimbabwe. However, as I was in the party, I learned and I realized that the party could no longer deliver this promise to the people. In fact, ZANU-PF had become a party of broken promises, primarily because President Robert Mugabe was not able or was he interested in delivering that promise. So I left. When I was outside, I began to fight President Robert Mugabe to leave, not only ZANU-PF, but to leave the presidency, because he became the single greatest cancer in the party. When President Robert Mugabe was out of ZANU-PF, was out of government, he was replaced by a man who I have worked with before, President Mnangagwa, a man who I have watched closely, and a man whose abilities I have faith and trust in. So I joined ZANU-PF because the reason I was fighting it is no longer there." So
let me come in there, Mr. Lumumba, and say some people, especially on social media, have actually been accusing you of being like a political flip-flopper, because you seem to have rallied with the opposition prior to the government of Emmerson Mnangagwa, but now you're saying you're joining Mr. Mnangagwa. Where exactly do you stand?
I think to get something very clear, I have never rallied the opposition. I have never supported any of the opposition principles. For the very reason why we went out and we set up Viva Zimbabwe, that there was still no political party, even outside of ZANU-PF, that stood for the agenda of young people. 70% of the country is made up of young people. We are the greatest shareholder in this company called Organization of Zimbabwe. But none of these political parties represented the interests of young people, nor did they even speak the language of representing the interests of young people. In fact, they were in the business of disempowering young people. So because of that, I never rallied any opposition. I rallied my organization and my effort, which I was a part of, Viva Zimbabwe, which pushed for the affirmative agenda of making sure we mainstream young people into politics.
Coming back to what we saw happening in the country, where the military took over the government and then we saw the inauguration of President Emmerson Mnangagwa being the chosen one from ZANU-PF, you seem to have like the hot button. You were on social media literally telling it like it was. Whatever you said on social media came true. Where were you getting the information from?
I think partly my political intelligence is very high. I have the highest political IQ of anybody in our generation. I have not only mastered the studying of the game, I have played the game of politics. So I understand this game intrinsically. I know politics. It is my everyday breathing. So my political IQ is sharp. I happen to know the personalities at play, so I could interpret their mood, I could interpret their most likely action. But I think I was also saying what anybody who would have wanted to see a different result would have said. I didn't want to sell the narrative of supporting a Mugabe continued rule. I needed to support somebody else, and the only candidate I saw who I could support was Mnangagwa. So sometimes maybe it came true because maybe I gave them the ideas. Maybe when I went out and I called it out, they said, "Ah, good idea. Perhaps we should do that." I don't know. I called it right. Maybe my political IQ is just that good.
And we've seen you in a lot of pictures on social media with some of the newly appointed ministers. And some people are saying like, Ace Lumumba is bootlicking. What exactly is going on? Who have you met?
I can't really speak to why people say the things that they are. I think what's happening is there's a lot of fans who are in denial. So they just really wish they were my friends. They just want a little attention from me and they want me to say hi to them. The real matter at hand, however, is why am I in these pictures? I'm in these pictures because I have one job and one job alone, to make sure the agenda of empowering young people is mainstreamed. We have to mainstream the conversation of where is the empowerment for young people. So if I'm with the Minister of Mines, I'm talking about that. If I'm with the Minister of Youth, I'm talking about that. Minister of Energy, I'm talking about that. The only thing I want to talk about is how do we mainstream young people's empowerment. The conversation I'm having with these ministers is, number one, I'm asking a question that, you know, have you identified in your ministry the opportunity for young people? Number two, I'm stating a proposition. Can we work together to create opportunities for young people in your ministry? Those are the two things I'm doing. Asking them a question, on an affirmative question, responding to them with an affirmative suggestion too. Now, if anybody has a problem with me doing it, I am very happy to get out of the way for somebody else who wants to do it.
Where are you heading to as AC Lumumba, Lumumba, Lumumba? What's your end goal?
I have two goals. My political goal is to make sure I have advanced as far as I can push the mainstreaming of young people's empowerment, to see young people getting the opportunities that the law provides for them. That's the 25% youth quota, 25% allocation of land, allocation of mining concessions, allocation of tenders and procurement opportunities. That's my political goal. My business goal is, I'm a businessman. I'm an entrepreneur. I intend on becoming a business rock star in this country. I want to be a millionaire in my own country. There's no other country I am going to go to where they'll say, why don't you try and be a millionaire here? I intend on making a lot of money over the next 5 years. And I hope every young person intends on making a lot of money too. That's my goal.
That was AC Lumumba, a ZANU-PF activist who once used an F-word against former President Robert Mugabe, speaking with VOA Studio 7, Marvelous Mtlanga Nyahuye.
A Zimbabwean judge today granted bail to Ignatius Chombo, the former finance minister. He was ordered to post a $5,000 bond and surrender his passport. The judge also allowed Kudzai Chipanga, a former leader of the ruling ZANU-PF party's youth arm, to go free on a $500 bond. The military detained both shortly after taking control of the government and ousting President Robert Mugabe last month. They were among the highest-profile people arrested in the wake of the coup. Chombo is a member of the Generation 40 faction of ZANU-PF, which was close to former President Mugabe and his wife, Grace Mugabe. Chombo faces corruption charges, and Chipanga is accused of making statements that undermine the military. Prosecutors oppose bail, saying they could flee the country if they are released from detention.
Cameroon's military has taken over two villages held hostage by separatists, the government says they are terrorists. The suspects have been collecting taxes, rendering justice in their law courts, and jailing people who refuse to collaborate with them. Moki Edwin Kinzeka visited the two villages in the English-speaking Southwest and has this report.
Hundreds of people have returned to the Bafias market in southwestern Cameroon nearly 2 months after they fled. Bafia is one of two villages that local government authorities said was occupied by separatists that they describe as suspected terrorists. 31-year-old Eno Bazil says he and about 100 villagers were arrested by the armed groups and detained at a local government school where a man calling himself General Armstrong, leader of the group, had installed his headquarters.
Took them here, flogged them, and you pay from 100,000 francs and above. And then when you come, they tie your eye, they beat you up. If you don't have that money, they promise to take your life. So people were paying more than 100 and something people paid that money. And they always attack trucks that are carrying cocoa to Douala. They attack them. Each pay 50,000 francs to pay a pass. Because if you don't pay, you will not pass. You will not carry cocoa to Douala.
Moyenge village, situated some 10 kilometers from Bafia, was another village that the armed separatists occupied for a month. Resident Ayuk Lucas says the invaders were judging and sanctioning anyone who did not respect them.
They even create a court, everything, a whole government, where they send bike to come and collect somebody, send it there and ask you to pay some money to them.
Last week, Cameroon military arrested 20 members of the armed group, but their supporters are still distributing recordings that preach the doctrine of total independence of the English-speaking regions of Cameroon. Moyenge resident Ebune Francis says the armed separatists are expressing anger over what he describes as the total negligence the government of Cameroon has manifested on the English-speaking regions. He says he, however, does not support secessionists, but stands for the early demands of the federal state that were made by teachers and lawyers when they began a strike more than a year ago that later degenerated.
We have been supporting the government, but nothing is coming. That's why we all are annoyed. We are abandoned by the government. We don't have water. Sometimes we don't have electricity. You want us to be happy with the government? No.
There are fears the armed separatists may be nearby. They have attacked and killed members of the military and police within the past 2 weeks. The government said it had dismantled some of their training camps, but officials said some of the fighters were crossing over to be trained in Nigeria. Peter Mbua, traditional ruler of Bafia village, says he has appealed to the government of Cameroon to assure people's safety.
I would appeal to the government to create a brigade here or a military base that will take care of this security issue here.
The government has assured the population of the English-speaking regions that it will assure their safety. Schools have been closed in most of the English-speaking northwest and southwest since November last year, when lawyers and teachers called for a strike to stop what they contend is the overuse of the French language. Violence erupted when separatists joined in and started asking for complete independence of an English-speaking state. On the 1st of October, they declared what they called the independence of the Republic of Ambazonia and asked the military to surrender and join them or leave their territory. They have so far killed at least 11 soldiers and policemen. In response, President Biya labeled them as terrorists and declared war on them. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Bafia, Southwestern Cameroon.
A media watchdog organization in Malawi is pushing government to start implementing the Access to Information Law, which Parliament passed last year. It empowers the public and the media to request information from government officials and institutions. The government says it does not have enough resources to start implementing the law. But the Media Institute for Southern Africa in Malawi, which has been in the forefront of pushing the bill, is critical of the delays. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The bill was introduced in 2006, but delayed for 12 years before debated in Parliament last February. This was largely because of the various reviews and scrutiny it underwent before being approved for debate. President Peter Mutharika finally signed it into law last year. But authorities say they cannot start implementing the measure because various sectors of society need to be trained on how to access and disseminate the needed information. Patrick Semper is the commissioner for the Malawi Human Rights Commission, tasked to oversee the process leading to the implementation of the legislation.
If the law takes effect today, for instance, there will be total chaos, because information seekers will have no idea how they go about looking for information. Information providers in the public institutions or private institutions, they'll have no clue because they've not been trained.
But Semperi says Malawians should therefore wait a bit longer before the law is implemented.
I think it should be a matter of months. I would foresee that this law should be able to take effect, definitely not after a year.
Teresa Temwegandanga is the president of UMISA Malawi. She says the delay is too long.
It's a bit worrying for us. We were celebrating when the president assented to it in February this year, but up to now, 10 months down the line, it's still not operational. So we'd want the minister to set a date for implementation of this law.
Government spokesperson Nicholas Dawusi says that the government cannot set the date until it finds money to fund the implementation.
There's no delay. We are laying down procedure. Creation of structures. Yeah, that's what we are doing. It involves money. It's not as easy as people are saying.
UMISA Malawi is currently holding meetings with various communities across the country on the legislation for the access to information law. Ndanga says many people have told them how authorities are taking advantage of absence of the law to hide information concerning developmental projects in their areas.
For example, we heard testimonies of development committees would go to the DC's office to ask on why certain projects are not finishing in time, and they'll be told off, and actually being told that if they continue demanding for such information, probably maybe development won't be coming to their areas. So we think that this is derailing development in a way.
About 21 out of 54 countries in Africa have now access to information law. These include Nigeria, Uganda, and South Africa. Karabo Raju is the media advocacy coordinator for a not-for-profit Amabungane Center for Investigative Journalism, which had been advocating for the smooth implementation of the ATI law in South Africa. She says she supports UMISA Malawi's push for putting the measure into practice as soon as possible.
It's absolutely justifiable. This is probably the one piece of legislation which must be implemented as quickly as possible. And what we've seen in South Africa, as well as other countries which have either implemented access to information laws, media being vigilant in reporting and investigating why things are going wrong in society, why things in government are going wrong.
Rajul said in South Africa, it took only about 9 months for the government to start implementing the law, which was promulgated in the year 2000. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
That was Chikorobo by Killer T. That's it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kudzanai Mutetwa.
And I'm Mike Corbett. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and VOA Ndebele broadcasts can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as at our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.